kind of black and white. The morning and the morning. Before I get started, we have quite a few people here for Mr. Milburn's case. I don't know how many intend on speaking, but because we have other inmates that have a hearing scheduled today, we need to consider some brevity in our statements. I hate to be totally restrictive, but I would ask that for everybody to keep any comments that they have from 2 to 3 minutes maximum, please. And the other thing is, a lot of times we have a lot of people show up in support of an inmate, and they all actually are the same thing, if nothing unusual. One person makes a statement, and then five others make the same statement, basically showing their support, and they understand that if you're here, you're in support, you don't actually have to speak. So all I'm asking is everybody consider everybody else and be as brief as possible. Some people will definitely have more time that they need to spend with their part of the hearing, but in general, we ought to be as brief as possible. Thank you. So, Mr. Milburn, would you please state your full name and ABC number for the record, please?
Matthew Joey Milburn, 045655.
Okay, sir, when that letter came to the phone call, you said something and nobody can understand what you said. Did you have a comment you'd like to make?
My comment was that my wife, Michelle Milburn, was not going to participate.
Okay. Thanks, sir.
You're welcome.
Okay, so you are appearing for the Airborne Board of Executive Tendency this morning in reference to the hearing. I introduced the board member that will be present for your hearing. On the screen, all the way to your left, is Honorable Michael Johnson. We have Honorable Roy Rittenhouse. In the center, we have the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's a board chairman. All the way to the right is Honorable Louis Canonis, and my name is David Neal. I'll be hearing you today.
Okay, thank you.
So, I would go over some information about your sentencing, your case, that sort of information, and then just occasionally there may be something that you hear that's not quite right. Well, I have a question I'll ask you. But we'll get that information and we'll get back to a more general discussion between the board and you, and then after we're done with that, your supporters can speak, and then people on the victim side, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, so you're 54 years of age, Master?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You served a life sentence for first-degree murder, which began January 27, 1992. This sentence was consecutive to an armed robbery charge that was included in the charging here, and that began on February 26, 1986. It was since expired. Mr. Milburn was sentenced according to a plea agreement in 1986. He became pro-eligible April 26, 2017, and was certified for this hearing for regular unauthorized discharge on March 1st, 2019. Mr. Milburn had three hearings in front for the armed robbery and attempt to go to a the next and second sentence, but he was granted that on January 27, 1992. This is his third appearance for parole on the first degree murder sentence.
I only went to parole twice. The second time I was granted parole. That was my understanding.
Okay, well, I'm taking the information out of Ames and it lists three times.
Okay.
If you're in front of the board the third time, maybe we can learn twice, and on the third time it was granted. Okay, that's one. If that is expired, the sentence, or the life sentence, it started back when we went from 2 months to 7 years sentence, and I'll tell you about it in 2 years, so we'll be on that now.
Yes.
Okay, so this is general information on the offer. On January 8, 1986, six, Mr. Milburn, was behind a Circle K and is confronted by a field police officer, Officer Fight. And the Officer Fight was doing a maneuver search for his own protection. A scuffle ensued where Mr. Milburn shot Officer Fight in the face. There was an extensive investigation afterwards, and quite a few people that Mr. Milburn knew that went ahead and gave information to the police. That information revealed not only that Mr. Milburn was a perpetrator, but it led to his arrest and conviction. One of the witnesses that Mr. Milburn talked to after the shooting, Mr. Milburn told him that while pointing his gun at Officer Fight, he said, "How does it feel to be on the other end of motherfucker?" Also, that same witness said that just before he killed him, he said he better say the prayers. At the time of the arrest, while Mr. Milburn was being talked to, he claimed that there was another individual that had actually shot Officer Fight. He refused to identify that individual, and that was based on loyalty, and he was sure that something bad would happen to him for being a snitch. And I'm not sure exactly when he may have shown that, but we'll do that in a couple of minutes. So, let's see, his criminal history is back in 1982 with several burglaries, and there's an entry in his criminal history where I have no other information than I saw, but it's from Rockport, Illinois, May 18th, 1994, and it shows a murder charge of conviction. And it was just, it's right after the listing for the Amazon offense. And I did happen to notice that the prefix for the agency identifier was IL and not AZ, and that's really a little bit closer.
What year is that?
It says 1994. I don't know if you know anything about it, but it is possible that you have something pending back there when all this happened. I don't know.
I know nothing of that.
Okay. Well, it's there, and I just want to make note of it. And like I said, I kind of raised my eyebrows, because of the date. But it doesn't really have a whole lot of information. That's part of the criminal history record. Sometimes in our agencies fail to list disposition on a lot of the charges out there, so we don't always have that, dismissed or prison sentence or whatever. So, let's go back to the offense. I have a couple of questions now. I realize that a witness that's talking to the police, when he says so-and-so, and in your case, what your name was then, but they mentioned that you told them that you said, okay, that becomes pretty, flimsy evidence, and maybe several people in the investigation that you said made the same comments to, similar comments, or they skewed the comments. So I'm not going to really dig into that. With everything we're looking at here, I think there's a lot more truth in just those statements. But according to the investigation, you claimed that another person pulled the trigger and shot Officer Fight. Is that still your contention?
No, sir, it is not.
Okay. When did you start taking ownership of the crime, sir?
I would like to say that I started taking responsibility for my actions. It's been a little while, but last couple of years I have.
Okay.
and spoke about it.
Okay. So what were you doing when Officer Fike approached you? You were back there, I believe you had your car back there. Well, I know what it was, I remember now. They said that you were injecting cocaine. So you back there behind the store in your car, shooting up when Officer Milburn approached you, correct?
Officer Fike.
I mean, Fike. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, that's exactly what happened.
Okay. So, I understand, a scuffle ensued, and you as somebody that's facing arrest for a drug charge, you might not want to get arrested, so you're trying to get away, and Officer Fike is struggling with you.
Yeah.
What would prompt you to get arrested? I mean, Officer Fike is a uniformed police officer, correct?
Yes, sir.
There's no doubt in your mind that if the police officer is what you're doing.
No, there wasn't. In my state of mind on the drugs was not clear. I mean, it wasn't me, sir. I mean, it was me, but I wasn't in my right, correct mind.
Okay, but you
state of mind.
But you're messed up on drugs, but you see this dark blue uniform. You recognize that it was a police officer that was getting this, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, as the struggle goes on and you're trying to run away, why in the world would you decide that you need to put a gun on a police officer?
I can't answer that. I know that I was scared. I had a fairly new wife, and she had my son, was 8 days old. I made a whole lot of bad decisions that night, and I have a lot of regrets and a lot of apologies I need to make.
Okay, you showed a complete disdain for authority, not only there on the scene, but by that disdain of authority spreads across the nation, and you don't have any. At the time, you have no. When I say loyalty to the law, you have
foresight. I had no foresight of what my actions were going to cause.
Right, but leading to that trigger pull, you had quite a bit of time. It may have been a few seconds, but it was really quite a bit of time to make a decision whether or not to pull the trigger. It's not like being in a war situation where you're ready for the enemy to pop out, and as soon as they pop out, you have to shoot or die. You're struggling with an officer that you could have just quit, or you could have got up and ran away, but you decided that to keep fighting, and then once you got the upper hand, you not only decided to run away, but you killed Officer Frank before you did. To me, that shows a total disdain for the legal system and authority and everything else. So this is quite a few years ago, I understand that. So, let me ask you this, and I don't have written down exactly which witness it was that was telling him this, but according to their investigation, there was two quotes I read that you supposedly told them you said to Officer Fike before you shot him. Are those true? Did you say that?
No, it is not. I was very young and trying to look hard in front of the one person I had told, which his name was Scott Puglies, my ex-brother-in-law.
So you're saying that you fabricated that to make yourself look good in the eyes of somebody else? And
yes, I was.
Okay. All right. So let's go on and talk about some of what's been going on more recently. I do notice that overall, in the Ames turnout, there was very minimal programming, but also Sean, I think there's another sentence, some information about some other programs that you were, you know, trying to take or working on at this time. So that's commendable. Why haven't you moved to pick up more program in over the years, sir?
I spent the first, probably the first 30 years of just private prison. I spent 30 years of doing the wrong things, and I've gotten away from all of that, and I've looked a lot into myself as to what I have done, and there was never any remorse that I was lacking when I first did this, but I hid it. I kept it buried by being involved in drugs and other things. I was not mature enough and was not ready to accept what I had done. So, and there's a lot of classes there that I did take. I've taken, I don't know, 30, 40, I don't know how many. I got certificates, I gave it to my family. And I've been involved in the Alternative Violence Project. I'm now a facilitator, and I've been to five of the groups I have of what are they called? Well, I've been to five of them so far, and this week I start another one, 6-1. I've learned a lot about myself since then, and I'm doing the right thing now, sir, and I'm not trying to sway anybody's mind to give me a chance. I'm here to just face what I'm supposed to face.
Okay, sir. You say that you spent 30 years, which would bring you up into 2015, 2016, doing wrong things. The idea of incarceration is rehabilitation. And if you spent 30 out of 32 years doing the wrong things, your contention is that in 2 years you rehabilitate. Exactly, that's what I mean. So in 2 years, if you spent 30 years doing the wrong thing, how does 2 years get you to a point of being rehabilitated to where you would make a good candidate for return to the community?
The walk I'm taking right now is very strong and it's very good. And I can't say, you know, other than, hey, you have my record there. I was screwing up. I was involved with all the wrong people. All the wrong people who were doing the wrong thing. And I should have been with the right people. And I wasn't. I look at it like, hey, you know what? It didn't matter what I did. Whatever I did wouldn't make a difference in anybody's eyes. So I did the wrong, and then I started doing the right, and it wasn't for y'all, it was for my family. I've hurt them enough, I've hurt the victim's family enough, and so now it's time for me to do the right thing, and I have been doing the right thing.
Okay, sir. In the last 5 years, you've received 4 tickets, all had something to do with drugs. I know 2 of them were dismissed, so you only had 1 in 2015, which was you were guilty of a major, and it was a positive or refusal on UA. And then in September of 2016, it was possession of drugs, and although there was an informal resolution, it indicates that there was something going on with drugs. So in the last 5 years, we've had 4 times the Department of Corrections has written up for something to do with drugs. 2 of them were dismissed, And I realize they're not in regular convictions, but something happened. You know, the charge being dismissed doesn't alleviate the fact that something may have actually occurred. So, we had a fairly extensive discipline record with considerable drug-related, some of them say contraband, so it's not always drugs, but that's the biggest contraband that sort of people were caught for in prison. So, what kind of assurance could you give us that if we were to give you a parole, that you wouldn't relapse in the drug right away?
That's not what I want in my life anymore. I've realized that. I don't want to use, so I'm not using. I'm not out to hurt anybody. I don't want to cause any more pain to anybody, my family, or anybody beyond my family. And that's my goal. I'm not using, and I go to a lot of programs, whether they're on their on the Ames, I'm involved in a good group of people. We do the right things, and that's what I'm involved in now. And I hope to stay involved in things like that, whether it's in prison or it's out of prison.
Okay, so I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Well, Mr. Milburn, I'm looking at your Ames record and some other documents we have, and those suggest that you did a period of your incarceration out of state. Is that true?
Yes, I did.
Okay, and was part of that in New Mexico?
Yes.
And was there an incident in New Mexico in approximately April of 99 that involved an assault that you committed?
I'm really not sure what you're talking about.
Okay, this might be the incident that Mr. Neal alluded to earlier, that there were charges, conspiracy, tampering with evidence, assault on a prison guard, it says here, that you were an accessory to that, and an assault by a prisoner, that you were an accessory to that. Was there a disturbance in New Mexico?
Okay, I know what I do know what you're talking about. All right. At one point, there are two different incidences that you're talking about. I was charged for conspiracy, and I don't know, attempt to enter. Contraband into an institution, maybe, or
possibly. It says tampering with evidence here.
Or tampering with evidence, yes. And that had to do with supposedly I was attempting to smuggle drugs into the institution to the visitation room, and there became a struggle right then in the visiting room.
And what happened? More details on the struggle.
Oh, okay. Well, they tackled me and restrained me. There was no, I didn't hit an officer or anything. I wasn't accused of hitting an officer. And that nothing was found. I was not found to have had anything. They put me on what they call is a balloon watch.
Right.
And check my stool and all that. And nothing was found.
Okay.
And then the other one was, I believe the other one was, I was charged with, in a riot that happened in New Mexico. I was charged with that. I was found not guilty.
What was your role in the riot? What was your role?
Personally, I didn't do anything to anybody in the ride. And when there was a point when they had about 60 to 70 of us inmates trapped in between a front door and a crash gate, and in between that hallway, there was a CO3 locked in her office, and some of the inmates were trying to kick in the door, and when I seen what was going on, I let the ones that I could influence that she was not to be harmed. We were not going to allow her to be harmed. And they didn't get the door open, so it didn't come down to us having to, step up to that situation.
Okay, sir. Thank you, Mr. Neal. I think that's it for now.
Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Thank you, Mr. Neal. Mr. Milburn.
Yes, sir.
I just want to ask you a few questions about your youth. And I am reminded that there are a lot of families that are stable and provide well, and yet kids still get in bad company or under bad influence to go down a very wrong path. And it seems that you had a very troubled juvenile period leading up to your young adulthood, to include a previous conviction for burglary. So what was going on with you at that time that led to this sort of behavior?
I continued to, as I did in here, I was using drugs and mostly marijuana, and thinking I was one of the cool kids, thinking that was cool, the guys who hung out and smoked cigarettes and all that. So when I should have took a right, I took a left. And there was some things in my family that involved one of my siblings. She had a rough time, and that may have had something to do with it. I don't really know why I did what I did as a child. I always wanted to stand out, and not in a good way.
Just out of curiosity, where did you go to high school, Mr. Melvin?
Moon Valley High School, and then I was sent to ACE High, Alternative Campus Extension.
Burglary is a pretty serious crime in and of itself, so we certainly see a lot of people getting involved with drugs when they're young, but how did it escalate to burglary?
It was once again, drugs were involved to buy drugs.
I also want to ask you a little bit about prison politics, and we're careful about that because we recognize that there are certifications that happen inside the Department of Corrections. There's security issues for the prisoners in and of itself because of competing factors. But did you get involved did you get involved with prison politics inside the Department of Corrections?
Yes, I had been. I have totally backed away from that, but I'd like to say that, this is not a place where I was able to come in there and show my remorse that I felt, because I was a real hero for doing what I did. Nobody knows what it really means, so I couldn't show the remorse. I wasn't strong enough or mature enough to show the remorse I had for what I had done, for all the people that I've hurt. And so I wrote the coattails of my crime to better my standing in prison.
standing now?
I'm in PC, sir. My standing is absolutely nothing.
Are you in PC because you stepped down, sir, or for what reason?
I was asked to do something, and I refused to do it. And I didn't refuse, outright refused to do it. I had it done more in a sneaky way, is where I had my wife call and get rid of that inmate to let him know that that inmate was going to be stabbed. He was going to be, you know, they were going to try to kill him. I was supposed to be involved in that. And I chose not to be. Because I started seeing where my life was going. And I didn't want it to go down that road. I've already heard enough. And I don't want to hurt anybody again. So, the inmate was locked up, and then I was later, sorry, it was put on me because they figured I had something to do with that.
Okay, Mr. Milburn, I do want to point out that the Department of Corrections does have investigative authority.
Yes.
We do not. We do not have investigative authority as a board. We cannot subpoena records. We are provided information by the Department of Corrections, but I think it's important to point out that we don't get directly involved with your communications or mail. Information is provided to us by the Department of Corrections.
Yeah.
But again, we don't have investigative or subpoena authority. I guess my last question is, so you're in protective custody now. Did you step down or debrief?
No, I did not.
Okay. I have no further questions, Mr. Neal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Canales. Mr. Johnson?
Yes, sir. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Sir, I had a couple of questions that I was going through the file looking at. At the time, I'm going to go back to when this incident occurred. At the time that this incident occurred, sir, did you recognize that that was a police officer that approached you?
Yes, I did.
Was that officer in police uniform?
Yes, he was.
Okay. The only crime that you had committed at that time that you were in the process of shooting up cocaine or doing drugs behind that Circle K?
Yes.
Okay. And you had previously done time for prison. You had previously been to prison for a burglary?
Right.
So were you afraid of going back to prison, or what was your reason to assault this police officer that was in full police uniform?
That was exactly the reason why.
Okay. And how long were you in prison for the burglary? A couple of years?
Yeah, about 3 years.
Okay. So what was so bad about those 3 years that you were in prison that led you to the belief that you'd rather shoot this police officer as opposed to submit to, you know, the possession of the drugs you were had?
I was in a paranoid state of mind because of the cocaine.
Uh-huh.
I can't give you any real good answers for what I was thinking 33 years ago. High on cocaine, other than my thinking process, was definitely not correct. It was altered due to my drug use at that time.
So, can you just explain to me, what was the mental state of yourself to go back and talk to family or friends to speak of this murder in such, like it was pride that was an accomplishment that you did with the police officer?
I just wanted to look like I was tough, and I wasn't.
Okay, according to your release plan, sir, that was back from March of 2018, and this is a release plan, your current one is February of 2019, And back a year ago, sir, you stated you had nothing that you wanted to present for a release plan. But now, this one you have. What brought about that change, sir?
I myself, I've changed. And at that point then, last year, I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready for it. So I didn't put in any kind of parole plan. My parole plan is not really finished because I was actually looking for a halfway house to go to that was a Christian-based halfway house.
And how long do you say that you've been off drugs? So I know I'm looking at.
I've been off drugs for a couple of years now. That I've not touched anything. I've not done any kind of drugs. I'm just in a real good place, sir, right now in my life. And that's why I'm sitting here before you and you're getting the truth out of me. I'm not making up any stories for you. This is the truth. This is being exposed as I'll never be, I've never been exposed before. I have a statement. I don't know when I'm allowed to, I have a statement prepared because I write a whole lot better than I speak. And I don't know when I'm allowed to read that. It will take approximately 6 minutes.
Okay. Just a couple more questions that I have for you, sir. You were involved in an armed robbery. Was that the night before this incident occurred of you and another gentleman was involved in an armed robbery?
It wasn't the night before. It was that night.
That night? Okay, you guys were involved in an armed robbery that night?
And, yes, sir.
Because we don't have a complete police report, what led to that armed robbery, sir?
To purchase drugs.
Mm-hmm. And you
to be more exact is to purchase cocaine.
Okay. And you were the one. Were you the one armed with the gun at that time?
Yes, I was.
Okay.
My co-defendant at that time was Kevin McCammon.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So, do you know? I see that you took a plea agreement for the charge. You didn't have a jury trial. So, was part of your plea agreement? You know why they dismissed it? They didn't charge you with that armed robbery.
Sure, they did.
They did.
I first did an armed robbery, and I had two consecutive sentences.
Okay.
One for armed robbery. And one for the murder of Mr. Fike.
Okay. I thought I saw the plea agreement that it said that somewhere in there that you wouldn't be charged with armed robbery. Maybe.
Well, maybe that. Yeah. I can't really recall, but maybe it wasn't that armed robbery, but it was an armed robbery that I committed. So I'm not really sure if it was that armed robbery or another one that I done.
Okay. All right. Sir. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Dr. Wright.
Okay, I'll be very brief because we're running out of time. Now, most recently, you said about 2 years ago, last time you used drugs or were associated with drugs. So you haven't used any drugs or been associated with any type of drugs since, when would that have been, 2016, sir?
Yeah, I haven't used any.
Okay. Let me just ask another question. I think I'm following up on something that Honorable Mr. Kiwanis asked earlier, and that was your political things going on there in the prison. Are you still associated with any of those STGs, sir, in any way at all, sir?
I am not associated with them as far as doing anything wrong. I mean, sure, I talk to them. Sure, I may eat with them at chow because you can't. You go to chow, you don't decide who you're going to sit with. I'm not looking to start any problems or whatever. Anybody can sit with me or, you know, any race, whatever. It doesn't matter to me anymore. All the stuff that goes on in prison is, excuse my language, but as far as I'm concerned, BS. It amounts to nothing. It amounts to nothing good.
Okay, I just asked that question because I think back in 2017, the Department of Corrections, you know, they did some type of investigation as it related to you and the STG, but I won't go into anything else dealing with that. As it relates to your release plan, you say now that you wish to reside to your cousin in Mesa. Why did you select her? I know now you stated that now you're looking for a halfway house. I'm just looking at your written statement that you...
Before that happened, I've been waiting to be interviewed, and they had a change in their administration, so I'm still on the list to be interviewed, and I'd rather be in some place where professionals who know what they're doing and know what they're getting their hands with, you know, full of, instead of others that, I don't want to be a burden. I really don't. So
what halfway house have you been, you're waiting to be interviewed with? Which halfway house is that, sir?
Alongside Ministries.
Okay. And so you're still waiting to hear back from them at this time, sir?
Yeah, they just had a change in administrators, so that's why it's taken so long.
Now, also take note, sir, that you have some employment opportunities. So how did you get connected with the companies that the company that you wish to be employed by, sir?
My Corps?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Well, that's owned by my brother.
Oh, okay. So that's a family company. Okay.
Yes.
And so what would you be doing now?
I was an electrician before I got locked up. So anything that he would allow me to do, whether it's delivery or to be involved in the electrical field, I was involved in that in the past. So it would come back to me what I need to do.
Let me just ask this question. Just take 1 minute to answer this one, sir. What changes have you made since last year? I know that might be part of your 6 minute statement, but what changes in 1 minute? What changes have you made since you came before this board?
What changes have I made?
Yes, sir.
Being more truthful, owning my mind, you know, owning up to what I've done. And, doing time, I've turned into kind of an old grumpy old man. I'm trying not to be such a grumpy old man, and I'm not judging people when I talk. I'm on a yard that we all have things that we don't want the others to know about. I'm in here, I'm on this yard in PC, and we have sex offenders here. I don't exclude them. I don't want to know about what they've done, and I'm not out to share what I've done. I hear things, but I've learned to either zone it out or plug in my earbuds and I listen to music so I don't have to hear things, bad, negative things about other people.
Okay.
There's enough negative things about myself.
Okay, thank you so very much, sir. And that's all I'm going to ask at this time because of time management, sir. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. I was looking at housing names. It's in 1986, August, it's something administration, but there was a 12-year span before another entry, which is just says protecting and nothing else. And then there's another 12 years, and it says maximum custody. So I'm assuming that at least part of that 24 years you were in New Mexico?
Yes, sir.
Okay, were you ever in Illinois?
Yes, I was.
Okay, when were you in Illinois?
94 to 98.
Okay. So that entry on your criminal history may just be your interstate compact moved to Illinois and what you were in their prison for. That actually sounds very reasonable, because if you were transferred to Illinois, you're going to have something in their records showing what the charges that you're in your prison and not could come back as criminal victims. Okay, so that explains that. Now, you said you're in protective custody right now?
Yes, sir.
When did you get put in protective custody? Because the last entry in age is February 22nd, and it shows medium custody.
Okay, well, I am in medium custody right now.
Okay, but that's... All right. Thank you, sir.
I can't...
Okay, sir?
Gary.
So
yeah.
We're going to go to your supporters at this time and allow them to speak on your behalf. So once we've had them, the victim side will speak, and then you'll have an opportunity for your final statement. And
okay.
If you want to just say something or whether you want to read your formal statement at that time, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so on Mr. Milburn's side, I don't recognize the names of the faces, so I'll let you people decide who is going to speak and in what order. Okay, and so whoever would like to speak first, come up to the podium. So whenever you're coming up, but once you get to the podium, state your name and then you can give your statement. And I would ask at this point in time that everybody try to stay 2 minutes or less. Okay?
Okay. I'm Michael Milburn. I'm Matthew's father. And the reason I thought I would take this little bit of time was to read the letter that I sent to the board. I don't know if you received it. I hope you did. I'm just going to go right through it. Our son Matthew is scheduled for today's meeting. As parents who have supported his confinement for the past 33 years, naturally, our prayers have been for his release. After his last hearing, his attitude changed. We believe two things happened. The parole board seemed to finally awaken him to the fact that if he did not change his ways, he would never be released from prison. Second, our prayers for him to truly turn his life to God are answered. He began signing up for courses. And there's a number of them, and I have the copies with me, which I'd love to give to you folks, if you so call it. During the time that Matt was taking these courses, he began talking to another inmate about God and began going to prayer groups with him. This is when we took notice of the change he was having. Matt has contacted Alongside Ministries, a Christian group, somewhat like a halfway home. He might be eligible to join upon his release if he qualifies. They are supposed to interview him soon. They had a change or something in their administration, so someone has told him that he will be interviewed. We understand why the City of Phoenix Police Department wants to keep him in prison because of his crime. His mom and I wonder, how much time will he have to serve to qualify being released? As at previous hearings, his family will be represented. Very truly yours, Michael and Peggy Milburn, mom and dad. And I would not have written this letter had I not truly believed that he has come to that point where he has accepted the Lord. I know a lot of people cop out on that and make big claims. He's for real. At least he is, as of yesterday on the phone. I mean, each time he calls me, he wants to share scripture and blah, blah, blah. Well, listen, no need going that far into it. But he is, as he claims, he has changed. He has changed. It's taken him a hell of a long time. But he, as well as his family, feel so poorly about his crime and the officer's family, Officer Fike's family. But there's nothing we can say or do to change that, other than what he has done to change himself. So thank you very much.
Question? Any questions? Okay. Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else I'd like to speak on Mr. Milburn's behalf? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, at this time we're going to turn it over to the victim's side and the local county attorney's office.
Thank you very much, Mr. Neal. First, I would ask that Assistant Chief Collins be allowed a couple of minutes of your time representing the Phoenix Police Department.
My name is John Collins. I'm an assistant chief of the Phoenix Police Department. Officer Fike was out serving his community and his life was taken in 1986. His name is read every April on our City of Phoenix Memorial as we read all the names of all our fallen officers. The names are across the street over on Wesley Bowman Plaza. It's on the wall for the Police Officers Memorial here for the state of Arizona, and it's back on the wall of Washington, D.C. Officer Fike doesn't get to go home. He has an end of watch ticket. He will be forever remembered by our organization. And speaking for the Chief's Office and the minimum of the Phoenix Police Department, we oppose any release or any parole. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. No question? No. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Franklin Marino, please, like to address the board.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Franklin Marino, I'm a 24-year veteran of the Phoenix Police Department. I currently serve as the secretary of the Phoenix Law Enforcement Association, the police union that represents approximately 2,400 rank-and-file Phoenix police officers and detectives, such as deceased Officer Fike. I wasn't here when this happened, but the ramifications of that day ripple through to today. And in this hearing, everything that I've heard, I find it hard that a man who's a year younger than me took 31 years to realize the impact of his actions on that night. Officer Fike wasn't murdered. He was executed. And Mr. Milburn was the judge, the jury, and the executioner. Officer Fike was out doing his job as a police officer, investigating. Mr. Milburn had choices. He could have surrendered and given into lawful authority of arrest and gone back to prison for possession of narcotics and armed robbery. He could have fled, but instead, he chose to kill Officer Fike. His wife was left to raise her two children on her own. I understand the Milburn's concern that their son's been incarcerated, but their hope is that they're going to get him back and he's going to come home someday. Officer Fike's family will never have that opportunity. Thank you.
Any questions? Any questions? Thank you very much, sir.
Vicki Mars, sister-in-law, would like to address the board.
my brother was... My name is Vicki Mars.
Thank you, ma'am.
My brother was very proud of being a police officer. He took it very seriously. He had been on undercover for 2 years and decided his two boys deserved and needed his time. He had left undercover, which he had a very good record at, and was back on the street for 2 weeks when he ran into Mr. Milburn. He did not get to see his two boys grow up. His boys, one doesn't even know his father. He was barely 5 years old, so he really has no active memory of his father. My mother curled up and died when her son died. It was very difficult for her. She ended up on a very long spiral down. It affects so many people. My children were affected. It's a very difficult thing, and I feel sorry for your family because they really want you out, and I don't think he deserves long enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you, ma'am.
Mr. Roger Marks, Vicki's husband would like to address.
Members of the board, I'm Roger Morris. Officer Fike is my brother-in-law. I want to thank the board for its questions because I think you saw it in the soul of Mr. Fike, or Mr. Milburn. After lots of people who commit murder are very remorseful immediately after the crime. He was not. He was boastful. He admits to the boasting. That boastful and unremorseful attitude carried forth into his court appearances. This is the fifth time I've had opportunities to observe Mr. Milburn, the first being his arraignment. We walked in shackles and smiling and winking at friends he saw in the gallery. That lack of remorse seen in ensuing instances, sentencing hearing, and now today, the two previous hearings by this board and today's hearing. The lack of remorse continues. One of you asked, why was there no release plan last year? And the answer is, it hadn't occurred to him. But it was questioned about last year. And it was kind of like, oh, gosh, maybe if I come up with one of those guys, one of those things, I'll get a different result. I'm sure that if there was some suggestion today that he would advance his chances by wearing a yellow ribbon on his left wrist, that the next time he came before this board, there would be a yellow ribbon on his left wrist. Not because he placed any significance on it, but because he felt the board did. There's an old saying, I'm entering, there's an old saying in legal circles that a whore always wears her white gloves when she comes to court. And very bluntly, I think this is a case of this white gloves. As his father acknowledged, there was no sense of remorse last year, and I suggest there's no sense of remorse this year. What there is a heightened sense of awareness that Mr. Milburn needs to change his image. So he's like a celebrity that suddenly tries to project a different image than the one that reflects their true personality and hopes that people will believe that based on that change, even though that change is only superficial. I would also finally comment on a question that you had asked Mr. Johnson. You asked him about some armed robbery that he committed, and he made this statement, which I wrote down in my script. He said, I'm not sure if it was that armed robbery or another one that I've done. The armed robbery that he was convicted of, it was fortuitous that in the course of investigating the murder, the fact that he committed an armed robbery either that same evening or the previous evening came to light in the course of a police investigation, and that's why they were able to get a plea to that armed robbery. But it's a statement that's, and I would encourage you to check the record if you think I misquoted him, or present suggesting I misquoted him. The statement pretty well concedes that there were other armed robberies which he has thus far avoided justice. I suggest that there is no genuine sense of remorse here, nor will there be next year or the year after or whenever he gets another time to opportunity to appear before this board. Their efforts to change image, but no efforts to change his soul. And I ask that you deny his petition. Thank you.
Any questions? No questions. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, members of the board. This morning I provided to the staff members, Ellen Dahl from the county attorney's office. I've been at two previous hearings, or one previous hearing. Prior to that, Patty Stevens, my boss, the Capitol Bureau Chief, she was present. I will note that Mr. Milburn, as was saying earlier by another individual, he's a chameleon. He will say and do during this moment whatever he thinks is necessary to calm the board, to be as direct as I can possibly be. But this isn't a prosecutor shaping things to her whim or for advantage. What we have done, and I have brought a copy for the board if there's ever any concern that there's a mischaracterization, is I had an investigator within my office listen to over 100 phone calls that Mr. Milburn has placed within the last year, recorded over the Securus prison line. I provided a copy of those summaries to you, and again, to ensure that there's the integrity of what is in here that was documented by Officer Jerry Dunn, a post-certified officer in our office, is not accurate. I have that here for the record. But as you can see here, let me begin by saying it is heartbreaking, not for only Officer Fike's family, but you see here the manipulation of his own family members. And many of you have seen this year after year. The phone calls and Mr. Milburn's own words betray him. He talks about the fact that now in his 50s he has grown up. Well, he was having Scott nearly assaulted for some perceived disrespect within the family. And those are all over recorded phone calls. The fact that he still refers to law enforcement as the opposition after killing a cop is ridiculous and offensive. And again, it gives you insight into the psychology of this inmate. And if there are any questions, again, regarding those phone calls, I think they speak for themselves regarding the manipulation of the family. And quite frankly, to say it out loud in front of the family is also heartbreaking. But you can see what he does to advance his cause. In 2017, Mr. Milburn told this board, "I wish I could take that bullet. I wish I could switch spots." That's not true. You see the look of Vicky, his sister, on his face, on her face, the look on her face when she has to talk about this every year. If he truly wanted peace, or he would switch spots, what he would do as a man to follow through on the integrity of that sentiment would be to quit putting the next of kin through these hearings. I want to be concise and only follow up on what many of you have touched upon, because I know you're very familiar with the records. But I would ask this question. Was the defendant in his correct state of mind when he tattooed "cop killer" on his torso, the swastikas across his back? And I have the pictures here regarding the Aryan Brotherhood. And let's be clear, this is not a good man stepping away. He probably accrued a drug debt and didn't have the ability to pay it back, and that's why he needed segregation, or PC. What he should do is what he agreed to do in this case. Serve his life sentence. Quit putting his family and the next of kin through these hearings year after year after year. That's what he agreed to. What has changed? Nothing. He has not earned the extreme privilege of release after killing a law enforcement officer, widowing the wife, and leaving a 14-year-old and 5-year and change child behind. In January of 2019, he says to a relative on the phone, "Man, I feel like getting loaded." Each of you is correct. He is someone that continues to use drugs within the prison setting. When you ask those questions regarding substance abuse and addiction, he's now the grumpy old man in a way to, I don't know what, instill some sense of sentiment or connection with the board. Not that I'm suggesting that anyone here is grumpy or old. However, the fact that he's having Scott, the person he is supposed to work for, potentially assaulted, except it gets called off. The family's aware of all the emails that are floating around, and they know they don't want that before the board. And Mr. Neal, I think that you did receive much of the information you needed, but because there are the large gaps regarding disciplinary histories, the inmate was first sent to Oregon, did not do well. He was sent to Illinois. He did not do well. He was sent to New Mexico. New Mexico sent him back, and if I may, quote from one of the memos very briefly. Inmate Milburn entered the Arizona system on February 26, 1986. Due to the notoriety of his case in which he killed a Phoenix police officer, he was quickly transferred to the state of Oregon. While in Oregon, he became a disciplinary problem. Thus, he was transferred to Illinois on May 17, 1994. While in Illinois, inmate Milburn picked up 27 reports, 11 of which were considered to be major reports. These reports included sexual misconduct, arson, and assault on staff. On May 20th, 1998, inmate Milburn was transferred to New Mexico in order to be closer to home in Arizona. While at the Lee County Correctional Facility, he was one of a group of inmates who participated in a disturbance on April 6, 1999. He was then transferred to a different area. There, his misconduct included possession of contraband capable of causing death or serious bodily harm, that is not narcotics, that's going to be a weapon, possession of a syringe, drug paraphernalia, and so on. He is a suspect member of the security threat group Aryan Brotherhood. And it goes on. There are multiple memos regarding his Aryan Brotherhood affiliation that I could provide if you would like that. Finding God right before a sentencing or a hearing such as this is common, as many of you know. It is offensive to everyone in the room. And again, if he truly wished peace upon those, both on his family side, quite frankly, and the next of kin, he would serve what he agreed to. Finally, it's hard to read some of these letters. I would note in 2016, and I have the names, there were over 20 individuals who wrote letters to the board opposing any sort of release. High school friends of Officer Fike, community members, family members. Officer Fike's widow wrote a letter for that hearing that could make anyone with a heart cry. She talked about a 14-year-old boy just becoming a man, his son. He had to grow up without his father. A 6-year-old boy grew up not remembering his dad. Their loss left a hole in their hearts that can never be healed. Grandkids he never knew. Weddings he missed. Matthew Milburn made me a widow at 40 years old, she writes. The loss has left a hole in my heart that cannot be filled. We have been sentenced for a lifetime of heartache. Now that sentence is chilling. And it speaks volumes as to what the appropriate and just decision should be from our perspective. And she signs it not even with her name. She signs it Officer Fike's widow. We would ask that you deny any sort of release for Matthew Milburn. He has not earned the right to leave prison. He agreed to the sentence, and there is nothing, absolutely nothing, that has been presented from our perspective that should give him that great privilege.
Okay. Any questions?
I have one question. I just want to clear, because I'm looking at a plea agreement where there was a robbery of the Exxon service station at 19th Avenue in Peoria that occurred on January 4th, 1986, which would have been just before a couple of days before this incident, and that's the other robbery I'm looking at in the plea agreement that was dismissed. And it's...
Yes, Mr. Johnson, also was, if I may, I have the grand jury proceeding here. There was another where he had robbed a female, if I may.
And I believe that would have been the Exxon service station. It was on 19th Avenue in Peoria, January 4th, 1986. Yeah, that's Police Department, VDR number 86001895.
I'm confident that you have that correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I have one other question. I thought I read in here that his parole had expired shortly before. It didn't really give a date. I didn't see clearly, but had his parole from when he had been paroled from prison just expired prior to this incident occurring? Or would you know? If you don't know, that's fine.
I do know. Let me have one moment. I have that document right here.
It looks like, she just showed me, well, it looks like it may have expired in 85.
Right, I know that he was sentenced in 1981.
Okay.
To three years, 9 months, concurrent with another matter, where he was sentenced to 2 years. So he actually had two prior felony convictions prior to this murder.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Hinshaw.
Yes.
You may have thought we forgot you.
No.
I'm sorry, I realize there are people on the phone, and I want to make sure we got you. Would you like to address the board?
Yes, I would.
Okay, now is your turn.
And I agree with everything that the district attorney's office said. I don't feel that there can be any justice to Robert Pike and his family except that he be refused, you know, to be able to get out of prison. I think he should spend the rest of his life incarcerated. And I really don't have anything else to say except what I've said in the past. And that's pretty much what I have to say.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome.
You're welcome to stay on the phone until the attorney finished.
Thank you.
Okay, so Mr. Wilburn. There is, well, first of all, is there anybody else that is wishing to speak on behalf of the mission?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Now, Mr. Wilburn, we're going to end your hearing. We'll be going into discussion and make a determination shortly, but before we do, we'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. Anything else you'd like to tell the board before we make our decision? Now is your opportunity. We do, for time management, ask you to make it as brief as possible, but you're not restricted to 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Before I begin, I just would like to say that I've never before spoken in front of a number this large. I know there's a lot of people out there, and I totally understand their feelings. I can respect that. I in no way dispute anything that I've been accused of. So I prepared this statement to read from. Please know, though, that it is with sincerity and from the heart that I speak. It seems to me that every year we're faced with the impossible task of choosing whether or not to believe an individual has some way earned or is deserving of the opportunity to rejoin society. Seems how prisons are absolutely filled with men who would say anything to get out. Words count for very little, especially when you must weigh those words against the actions of the individual. That taken into account, I've learned quite a bit about myself. And let me preface this by saying that my intention here is in no way to offer excuses of any sort. Sincere change in a man comes about and is a slow process. Firstly, one has to come to a state of complete recognition. Before that, one can find acceptance. I spent a large portion of my adult life unwilling and therefore unable to even begin recognizing what I was becoming and what would it ultimately become of me. And when younger, I learned to mask my own pain through the extensive use of various drugs. As I slipped deeper and deeper into a drug-induced stupor, I then caused pain and damage to other lives irreparably, ultimately escalating to the point of taking another's life. And still for many years, though I knew the absolute unforgivable nature of what I had done, I continued to numb whatever my feelings about my actions were by using, until I could no longer stand who I'd become, no longer fail to accept responsibility for the spiderweb of pain and misery my actions had caused. And so I sought help, first with myself, my addiction, and upon coming out of the aforementioned stupor inside which I had existed for so long, began the process of truly looking at myself, who I now was, and the unacceptable nature of my life's works and the way I had until that place dealt with it and responded to my actions and the hurt they caused. The natural step I took next was acceptance of these things as being the way they are, and of the fact that I cannot go back and change what I have done, no matter how seriously I wish that I could. But upon gaining recognition and acceptance, what I could do was begin changing who and what I am. I could choose who I am to become, which is what I've begun the painstaking process of. Having now, with the help and by the grace of God, firmly planted myself in sobriety, eliminating habits, establishing new ones, changing myself from the inside out, stepping forward in faith and hope as I rid myself of a man I know to be unacceptable and doing all the work to diligently follow in the footsteps of God, leading me most prominently to this seat where I know I will change no one's mind or heart about who and what sits before you, attached with one thing, that thing which the old Matthew would not and was far too cowardly to do. Firstly, to admit clearly what I have done. I took the life of a good man for no other reason than for that I didn't want to be arrested and sent to the exact place I'm in fact in. It was a senseless and cowardly act. And even more distinctly, I never once bothered to take ownership of what I had done. I shot Mr. Fike and killed him, robbing him of his life, robbing his wife, children, family members, and friends of a husband, father, and a friend, and robbing the community he served of a good man and a member. It's been said that I showed no remorse, even that I bragged about it. I won't dispute these things, only that whatever remorse I felt then, though real, wasn't something I was at all prepared to deal with. That said, I want it to be known now that remorse is not lacking, and I am even that much more remorseful now for that I have never directly done what I am now doing. And I mean no disrespect here, but I would like to now address Mr. Fike's family and friends, those gathered here.
Sir?
And any who
are. Sir?
Yes.
Address the board only.
Okay. I can in no way even begin to accurately express how very sorry I am for having taken from you that which is irreplaceable, nor can I express to you the sorrow I feel for having caused you the pain that most assuredly comes with having lost a loved one. And for this to come so many years overdue, I know comes as little if any consolation. It is my hope, in the very least, that it will bring some measure of peace, a small amount of closure. If I could undo this thing, I would. A silly statement, but a sincere one. And I don't say these things in regret for what became of myself and my life as a result, but wishing for you not to have experienced the personal pain and anguish that was a result of what I've done. Again, I understand that words offer very little, but I stand in hopes that if my science over the years has been robbing you of the ability to heal, this might help. Thank you. Some of the things that had come to light that the county attorney was bringing up about my not changing my social behavior, that whole incident happened before I'd been in D.C. That was including, you know, my brother. I was upset, but I don't have no excuse for it. It was unacceptable, and it's something that my family and I have gotten past because through manipulation, I was kind of misdirected into attempting something that didn't want to happen, and it didn't happen. And with that being said, thank you for all your time. I don't really have much else to say about my actions. 2 years have been deplorable. Starting on the night of January 8th, actually before that. So.
Okay.
It was, my whole life basically has been drug induced. It's not anymore, like I said, I've embraced life and sobriety, and I'm walking the walk I want to walk now. So, thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. What are we going into discussion and making determination? We'll be talking amongst ourselves. You may think we're addressing you, but we won't be. But we ask you to stay on the phone, just remain silent. You can hear the entire conversation. And once we're finished, I'll be back to you. Okay, sir?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. What is now discussion? Well, this is an interesting case. A lot of things to consider here. The one thing that really stands out the most with me is Mr. Milburn saying that he was a good out on things for 30 years and now he's straightened up, and that's 2 years ago. He has said several times that it is a slow process to be rehabilitated. And if he only started that journey 2 years ago, he's got quite a ways to go. I also took note that there were several things that we asked of him that were mentioned, and he tried to sidestep and evade a lot. Brought up the issue of Illinois, and he was like,
yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
And, oh, yeah, I was there, and there was something going on. It probably was just an entry into their system that he was in for murder on a life sentence in Illinois, and then when the trial again shows up in this kind of history. But he basically evaded that, to be honest. No mention of Oregon, and since we didn't see it as a... I did see he had an Oregon identifier, but that didn't mean he didn't spend time in their prisons. But an SDG situation is what he had. He's in PC, but he's not in PC according to Ames. He could be several meetings there where he's at. And so he showed me what he's got. But it's for STGs, which he basically kind of pushed that off into the money situation. He still doesn't seem to have much respect for authority of any type, other than his authority. The phone conversations were very interesting. They would have the transcript, we got some of these, but they appear to be that of a controlling person, somebody that wants to be in charge, do what's necessary to get their way. And it seems awfully disrespectful to the family to treat them that way. But down to the bottom line on this, I don't see Mr. Milburn as a candidate for release at this time. But I'm going to have some discussion from my fellow board members as well as me. Mr. Canales.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I'll read from a few notes that I was jotting down during the hearing. It's not that I believe one human life is worth much more than the next person's. Any murder is tragic beyond words. But I think that the murder of a police officer weighs much more as a capital crime because of the combined violence, loss of human life, and the ultimate disregard for justice, public safety, and those who risk their lives to protect their community and citizenry. I believe that crimes of this nature, the murder of Officer Fike in particular, rise to the level of true life imprisonment, And I take solace that the state of Arizona eventually enacted a natural life prison sentence as an alternative to 25 years to life or death. In short, I do not support parole. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Somewhat echoing Mr. Kinnearness, I believe that a uniformed police officer represents the whole society, represents all of us, and to shoot a uniformed police officer is to symbolically shoot all of us. And I do not see Mr. Milburn as a candidate for parole. Thank you, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Ms. Johnson?
I agree with my colleagues.
Dr. Wade?
I agree with my colleagues as well. This is an unfortunate situation, and therefore, I do not feel that he's ready for general parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest.
Thank you, sir. So I'm going to make a motion, and this regards to Matthew Milburn, agency number 045655, and the motion is deny ready for absolute discharge or home arrest at this time. With the date of the crime and after a one year set off.
Second.
Okay.
Agree.
Agree. Okay. Second by Mr. Johnson. Agree, Dr. Wright, Mr. Jones, Ms. Rittenhouse. And the reason for me is a serious violent offense, loss of human life, serious eating offense. I'm going to say victim harassment because if you're putting me on and making the statements that you put forward in the way, I would definitely be harassment. As a repeat offender, prior criminal history. Although I always have poor institutional behavior, 2 years is too recent for this term of action. And as far as what we've seen members of the programming, the release time is also no specific verification on placing DOC months, 2 months worth of living expenses already in there. We're going to have those proof. Unless there's something else that my colleagues would like to add, that would be that. Okay, Mr. Milburn, you heard the discussion and our decision. The board has voted unanimously to deny you living parole, home arrest, or active discharge at this time. And you did hear the reasons I stated?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, thank you very much for appearing, sir. This will be in your hearing. And please put the CO3 back on the phone.
Okay, thank you.
And I'd like to thank everybody that came on both sides for appearing today. Thank you for your time. And if everybody on Mr. Milburn's side would exit out, it'd be your left of the door on my right, and all the different sides, the door on my left, please. Thank you very much.
And stop in here. Be sure to close the little, I see the little flap thing on your.
The board is going to recess.